Good morning, everyone. Our subject this morning, to serve is to be free. In Berlin, we can see the struggle between the East and the West. In a city divided between one part that is, according to the world standards, a slave nation, and another one that, according to the world standards, is a so-called free nation. This struggle goes on between the two great military camps of the world. It seems to be focused in that particular place, so it emphasizes the fact that there is a difference in the communist way of life and the so-called democracy, or the democratic way of life. The world today yearns for freedom. I think we need this. The world today yearns for freedom. Recently, the African nations have emerged as free, independent countries in this world. We've seen them go into the United Nations. We've seen the various performances that have gone on as a result of incorporating some 40 or 45 new nations into the United Nations in the last few years. All these nations and peoples everywhere yearn for freedom. What is freedom? To a man in jail, freedom is getting out of jail. We recently read how several fellows tunneled their way out of Alcatraz, a feat that had never been accomplished before, and it's, I guess, not clearly known whether they escaped or whether they were caught by the tidal currents of San Francisco Bay. But in any case, they escaped the island, and it was said that they spent many months, even years, in preparation for this escape. So freedom to them was to get out of an enclosure that they could not tolerate. Freedom to a scholar is something quite different. It's freedom to pursue one's intellectual interests in whatever field he has chosen. And universities and colleges want freedom to pursue knowledge. The students want freedom to pursue knowledge and to gain understanding of the world in which they live. Freedom to a businessman is still something different. And we have the constant conflicts that exist between government and the business world because of a seeming conflict between the two. Business wants freedom to pursue its own ends, feeling that the laws of supply and demand and the economic laws will govern the business world properly. Government thinks it takes a little extra protection for the public. So freedom is a different thing to a businessman. Freedom to a teenager is still something different. That's freedom to get out at night, perhaps. Freedom to get away from the boss, whether it be mama or papa or a combination of the two. So freedom to a teenager means freedom from parental control. Now, we talked about the freedom that was desired by the people in East Berlin. This would be true for many peoples in the so-called captive countries of the world. We raise the question at this point, are any of these freedoms really freedom? Are they worth the trouble in their pursuit? Maybe in some cases they are, but we seriously question the value of that type of pursuit. Take, for example, a recent case right off the shores of the southern part of the United States, where a people wanted to be free from a dictator. They selected another leader. They followed him. He's taken them into worse dictatorship and control than they ever dreamed of under their preceding dictator. Freedom is an illusion to them. They never got it. They lost what freedom they have. They're far worse off now than they were before. Too often, freedom is simply dropping one set of chains to pick up another. Because these are pursuits that are not in keeping with what true freedom is. Freedom is not basically a national problem or a group problem. It's an individual problem. It is a problem for each of us as individuals to escape the chains that bind us. The world embraces superstitious philosophies that bind the world, both collectively as nations and individually as people. People search for escapes from their various trials and tribulations. And certainly the world has trials and tribulations in this day and age. There are many philosophies, political philosophies, that have been tried to, in an effort to devise some system which will help the individual. Take, for example, within this century, we have seen the rise and fall of fascism, the rise and fall of Nazism, which was a twin brother. These systems have tried to exalt the humankind, to lift him up, to give him a glory which God apparently never intended that he should have in that particular direction. All of these systems exalt the creature, whether individually or collectively. Take communism. This exalts the creature on a collective basis. It raises the mass of humanity, the world, and puts it on a pedestal and makes the creature God. Disposes of the God of Israel. It makes the creature God on a collective basis. Monarchy does it in another way. It sets up a supreme ruler, the king, and he guides the affairs of the people. Democracy does the same thing, only from a little different approach. It raises the creature on an individual basis and says the creature is supreme. But none of these systems exalt God. None of them. They're all designed to exalt the human creature. In John, the 8th chapter, verses 31 and 32, we read some very strong words. Then said Jesus to those Jews who believed on him, "If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed." Now, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth. Ye shall know the truth. And the truth shall make you free. All basic ignorance in this world is because somebody doesn't know the truth. And it's the truth that can free us. Now, we were talking this morning in our class about the fact that knowledge has increased in the world, and that by investigation, a great deal of truth has been revealed. We know the truth concerning certain physical laws which govern the world and the universe in which we live. We know the truth concerning the chemical laws. You put a little bit of this element with a little bit of that element, and you get a third substance that's completely different. We know a lot about these things. That is, the people who study them. We find that these laws can be discovered and utilized, and that they follow certain basic laws which apparently are unalterable, except by the deity, of course. But when we consider the truth in other areas, we find that investigation does not produce such knowledge. By investigating the rocks, or the trees, or the heavens, the physical world, we do not discover truth concerning man. It escapes and is not to be found in any of those pursuits. Man's knowledge concerning himself has not advanced one iota in 6,000 years of history. Concerning his environment, yes, a great deal of advance. He knows all about the world about him. I don't mean there's nothing more to learn. There's a lot more to learn. But he knows a great deal about the world we live in. But he doesn't know about himself. He doesn't know why he's here, where he came from, or where he's going. Sad state of affairs. But Jesus says, know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Now, Paul is recorded in the 17th chapter of Acts. Stood on Mars Hill in Athens, and he looked about him, and he saw the idols. He saw the graven images that man had set up. Now you may say, well, this was another time, and people don't have graven images today. To a certain extent, this is true. Instead of graven images, they have an image of another kind, philosophies. In other words, word fabricated images of what they should believe and what they want to believe and so forth. Now, when you invent a god to fit your own ideas, even though you don't make an image of it, you still have a graven image as far as the true God is concerned. In other words, you have a false god. You've created one. Now, man was created for God, not God for man. And too much of this world operates on the principle that God was created for man. Fact. Now, Paul looked all around him and he saw the graven images and he picked out one which was dedicated to the unknown God. And to him, he addressed the people, or through him. And he started telling about how he had sent his son to this world and that he had performed signs and wonders and made himself known through his son, Jesus Christ. And he comes down to the 30 and 31st verse. He says, and the times of this ignorance, that's the time of these wooden images, graven images, of the times of these ignorance, God winked at, but now commandeth men, all men everywhere to repent. Why? Because he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness. By that man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he raised him from the dead. This was the assurance that God gave that the one that they saw was the right one. Now he was raised from the dead to live eternally. People have been brought back to life when they've been suffocated by drowning or by smoke asphyxiation, but they've never been restored to life that goes on permanently. They've only been brought back to life as it was before their temporary demise. Superstition, such as Paul saw about him, blinds and binds. And the chains that really are holding man down are the superstitions that he has invented, which prevent him from turning to God for guidance and for direction. Now, think about this, that any error, any mistruth causes an imperfect result from what we're trying to achieve. In other words, error limits our activity. The less we know on any subject, the more limited we are. This is true whether we're talking about farming or business or religion or anything else. The less we know, the more limited we are. Now, as far as being happy is concerned, we can know rather little about farming, and we may still be happy. We won't live as well, perhaps, but we can still be happy. We may know rather little about business, and we can be reasonably happy in this life. But if we don't know about ourselves, we can only find the limit of happiness which mortal life provides, and I think all of us here will agree that that is extremely limited. Now, we've read that the truth shall make you free. We might raise the question, free from what? Got a friend here. Free from what? Let's turn to the sixth chapter of Romans. Sixth chapter of Romans. And we find in verses 22, 23, but now being made free from sin. Now, we can become free from sin as we cast sin away from us and withdraw from it by approaching unto God. Now being made free from sin and become servants to God, ye have your fruit unto holiness and the end everlasting life. So if we want to be free, we must be free from sin. For the wages of sin is death. Now, if we were to ask ourselves, what do we want to be free from more than anything else, we might say death, because this is the finality of human experience. But that would be a little bit misleading, because you cannot be free from death until you're free from sin, because it's sin that puts you there and keeps you there. Jesus freed himself from sin, but when he went into the ground, he did not stay. God raised him. He was righteous in God's sight. In other words, he had freed himself from sin. Sin tends to perpetuate itself in the individual. Now, why is this so? Because we are born basically selfish. We're a selfish creature. A little child is 100% selfish. I mean an infant. As they grow up, they should become less selfish. Unfortunately, some never grow up, even though they get 6 feet tall. Some never grow up. They're just as selfish at 6 feet as they were at 2 feet. Now, that person is still an infant, emotionally and spiritually. If he doesn't grow up, if he doesn't get out from the selfishness. Now, the complete outgrowth from selfishness is putting God first, our fellow man second, which would include our family, and ourselves third. This is complete maturity. Jesus, the only one who ever achieved complete maturity, although certainly there were some other worthies of old, and there are some, I'm sure, in this present day, a few, who have achieved a considerable measure of maturity. But complete maturity places this order first. God first, our fellow man second, and ourselves third. The natural tendency, though, is to put ourselves first, our fellow man second, and if there's anything left, give it to God. That's the natural tendency. It is the order which is practiced by the vast majority of people. It's commonly practiced. Self first, your fellow man second, God, if there's anything, any time remaining. But that is not the order intended, and it is the order that produces the chains which lead unto death, because self-satisfaction is the basis of the whole concept of sin. Because serving oneself is the antithesis of serving God. It's the opposite. So we serve ourselves, we are serving sin, we serve God, we are not serving sin. Today, I mentioned the beginning, the fact that many people figure freedom as maybe getting out of jail or getting government out of their business or being free from parental control, or otherwise doing as we please. One thing that we should not confuse is freedom and license. Freedom does not give us license to indulge in anything we wish. Somebody once said that we have freedom to swing our arms all we want to. But our freedom ends where the other fellow's nose begins. Actually, our freedom ends a little bit short of there, because God wants us to do certain things. He wants us to serve and obey Him. Now, we have freedom to serve and obey Him or to reject Him. If we serve, we have the greatest freedom. Because by serving, we can escape the chains of sin that bind us. That's why we started out by saying, to serve is to be free. To serve is to be free. If we want to escape the chains of sin that bind us, we must serve God. Because to the greater degree that we serve ourselves, we are binding ourselves. Let's take one example. We could think of perhaps hundreds. We are free to imbibe in the spirits that come out of a bottle. No law stops us. All you have to do is have enough money to buy it, and if you can't buy it, you can make it, maybe. You can imbibe to any degree you want to. If you exercise this freedom to imbibe, what happens? Well, it is said, and this is a pretty good figure, accurate, that 1 out of 10 persons who starts to drink liquor ends his life as an alcoholic. Now, an alcoholic is a person who has a disease of alcoholism. In other words, he's sick. Once you become an alcoholic, of your own free will and volition, you cannot stop drinking. And it produces terrible physical results, as well as destroying homes, families, so forth. So you can see the exercise of freedom can bind you in a way that is intolerable. The person who wants to be free to go and take somebody else's goods, and he sees a store, and inside there's some watches in the window, and he wants a couple watches, and he breaks the window and gets one, he's exercised what he thinks is freedom, but he winds up behind bars in the pokey. And he isn't very free when he spends 10 years in the pokey. So his freedom that he wanted causes him to be bound very tightly. Now, there are three possible positions that I think we can assume in life. Let's turn first to the 24th Psalm and read a couple verses. Psalm 24, starting with the first verse. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Incidentally, we can talk quite a long time about that. But if the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, it includes you and me, because we're part of the earth. Therefore, if we are the possession of God, He made us, He put us there, does it not behoove us to find out about Him? We think it does. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. For He hath founded upon the seas and established it upon the floods. Who hath ascended into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in His holy place? Who's going to do this? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. Now, if we want the freedom that can come from God to stand in His holy place, we must have a clean hands and a pure heart. So, again, serving God gives us freedom from the sins that bind us. He shall receive the blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. I think we would like the blessings of the Lord. In the last few days, we've been privileged to drive through some of the nicest country to be found in the middle part of the United States, coming down through the hills. At least I think so. Beautiful country. And we see the handiwork of God about us. If you go to the East Coast and behold the oceans and the seas and the bays and the inlets, you see the handiwork of God. If you go out west you see the handiwork of God. These are but samplings of the good things to come. Even in some of the things that man has built, by being given powers from God and the ability to control nature or certain aspects of it, we find the handiwork of God. Don't think for a minute that radio and television and automobiles and all these things that we enjoy, at least the good portions of them, some things there are fine, don't think that they are entirely of man's contrivance. All that man did was put to use the powers of God or the universe and make them work. But the powers have been here throughout the ages of eternity. Radio waves have been here for ages. It's only incidental that man has discovered them in recent times. But the source of all these things are from old. Now, there are three possible positions that we can assume in life. I think only three. You can check on this, see what you think. We can be a servant, we can be a beggar, or we can be a thief. I think nothing else is possible. Nothing else is possible. If we have something given to us that we did not earn, we are in the capacity of a beggar. In other words, we're getting something for nothing. People today look down upon that type of person. And the wealthy person who has gotten something for nothing, in other words, he contributed nothing, but he has great abundance, is usually sneered at to a considerable degree by the people who associate with him. They don't have much respect for him. The world seems to be looking for something for nothing. Too often, we think this is the course to take, to be a beggar, to get something for nothing. There are many people who are beggars in this world, people who live and sponge off of others, making no contribution. I don't think we want this. Basically, it destroys our self-esteem. I'm not talking about pride here, but our self-respect, it destroys. We can't be too happy when we are begging for what we have. And some of us perhaps live that way. We hope not anyone here. We can be a thief. We can go out and take what does not belong to us. Fine example of thieves who have gotten ahead is the chief over in Moscow who runs things. He wants something for nothing. But we don't want that sort of thing. The other kind of thieves are in jails or soon will be. But to be a servant is a high calling. How high a calling? The Son of God was a servant. He served all. He served his apostles and his disciples. In the sixth chapter of Romans again, verse 22, I guess we read that one before. But now being made free from sin and become the servants to God. Now, this is a high calling to serve God, the highest calling that we can achieve unto. Again, this type of service leads to an exalted position, because even Jesus washed the feet of his disciples. He did so to indicate that a lofty position was not the goal to be sought, but rather a position of humility. If we contribute, we are worthy of what we receive. If we do not contribute, we're in the category of a beggar or a thief, and we're not worthy of what we receive. We'd like to turn to the 25th chapter of Matthew and observe some principles. We have here the parable of the virgins. We'll read first four verses first. Matthew 25, verse 1. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. Pardon me. 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil. In other words, they didn't completely prepare. They started a preparation. They took lamps. They took lamps because they recognized that darkness would come. But they were only partially prepared. They didn't have the oil to make the lamps burn. In those days, they had little lamps. You put oil in them, there's a wick. You light the wick, and you have light. Maybe some of us who have lived in the country know what we're talking about. Now, they that were wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. In other words, they were prepared. They had the materials necessary for survival when darkness came. Now, incidentally, I think that the parable of the 10 virgins refers to followers of Jesus, some being wise, some being foolish, and does not refer to those who are not followers at all, because they wouldn't even bother to make any preparation for the darkness to come. But 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. 5 were prepared, 5 were not. And we know that when the master came, that he said down verse 12, he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not," when those appeared wanting oil when they did not have it. Going on to verse 14, we find another parable. "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey." Now, first of all, I think we should notice here that he gave them the talents, and then he went away. He did not remain in charge, keeping them under constant supervision. He gave them their instructions, he gave them their equipment by which to live, but did not remain and keep them under daily control. Because those who are followers of Christ are supposed to have enough initiative to control their daily lives as long as they have the tools with which to live. The tools are found in the scriptures. So he went away and left them to their own devices. We know the result, that though the one who had 5 talents went to work and he produced 5 more talents. The one who had 2 talents went to work and produced 2 more talents. But the one who had 1 talent, he thought he had an excuse, so he went and he buried his and produced nothing. Let's look at verse 24. "Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid my talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine." But that was not what Jesus wanted, or the character in here who was the man traveling in a far country. That was not what he wanted. He wanted a return, even though he could have produced results himself. But think about it. God does not want those that he forces or molds himself into accepting him. He wants those who voluntarily say that his way is better than our way. Those are the ones that he wants. So he selects those who take the talents that are bestowed unto them and who multiplies those talents. We have the talents, brethren. It is our duty and obligation to see that they are being multiplied. Jesus himself came to minister. He produced himself. He was a producer of good things, not a consumer of the good things of others. In John, the 4th chapter, and verse 31, we find this. For if I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. No, I'm in the wrong chapter, pardon me. In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore, saith the disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish this work. This was the job that Jesus set out for himself, to do the work of the one that sent him. And then in Mark, the 10th chapter, verse 35, And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldest do for us whatsoever we should desire. And he said unto them, What would ye that I should do for you? They said unto him, Grant unto us that we may sit one on thy right hand, the other on thy left in thy glory. This was a natural request. We would all like to be chiefs. Maybe some of us don't voice it like others do, but most of us have a secret desire. We like to be superior in something. These who were disciples of Jesus, they wanted to be chief. Now maybe it was a rather wholesome desire in that they wanted to be near the Lord. But they wanted to be very near the Lord, one on the right hand and one on the left. They wanted assurance that they were right there and that they were not 10 rows back. In other words, they wanted a position of authority or of recognition. But let's go on down to verse 42. But Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, Ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon all. This is the way of things. You have some who are chiefs. But so shall it not be among you. So shall it not be among you. In other words, this should not be an objective to be in a favored position. But whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. In other words, the way to be chief is to serve. The way to be exalted is through humility. Any other way is coming through the fence in the wrong manner, climbing over the gate rather than entering the proper way. Now, Jesus himself anointed his disciples to preach the gospel. And in Luke, the 4th chapter, we find this thought. Luke 4, verse 17 and 18. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. Now this was delivered unto Jesus, and in Mark, the 16th chapter, verse 15 and 16, we find where it was delivered unto his disciples. And he said unto them, Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned. So, brethren, as our title was, to serve is to be free. And just as the disciples of Jesus were commanded to go out and serve, and Jesus set his own example by serving all of his fellow man, particularly his disciples, secondarily all those about him, so it is our obligation to serve those about us. In so serving, we serve God. Our principal obligation is to God. Our secondary obligation is to our fellow man. But we can, to the greatest degree, demonstrate service to God by serving our fellow man in the spirit in which Jesus served his fellow man. Thank you.